We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, Dr. Robert Epstein. He is the senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. He is the author of the forthcoming The New Mind Control, of which an essay of that same mind name is at Aon. We will link to that. Dr. Epstein, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Give us a sense of the research. How you started this research? What was it that premised your researching this question of whether or not the internet has the ability to influence or even flip elections?
Well, I had been looking at some of the literature on how search rankings affect consumer choices, and there's actually a pretty big scientific literature on that, and it's quite interesting. People are very, very much impacted by where something is listed in search results. That's why 50% of all of our clicks go to the top two search results. Basically, higher search results are better than lower ones, and we all learn that pretty quickly. And so we end up buying things that are listed higher. And I began to wonder whether that trust that we've developed in search rankings would apply to more than just purchases. And I wondered whether it could affect our opinions, our attitudes, our beliefs about different things. And so specifically, Ronald Robertson and I decided to see whether high-ranking search items could affect how people vote. And we began a series of experiments, and that was a few years ago. And we were pretty shocked by what we found.
Well, tell us about that first experiment, and then so that we get some context to register the surprise that I had when I read your piece as to how much influence that what you call search engine manipulation or SEAM, how much influence that has on someone's decision to for whom to vote.
Sure. Well, in the very first experiment, we had about 100 people from the San Diego area. It was a very, very diverse group, though, and we recruited people to kind of look like, the average American voter. So we had the full age range and, a very, very diverse group. And we randomly assigned people in that group to different subgroups. In one, they ended up doing an online search in which the search rankings favored one candidate. And in the second group, search rankings favored a second candidate. In the third group, the search rankings were all mixed up. They didn't favor either candidate, so that's your control group. And
now, are these fake candidates?
Yeah.
Are these fake candidates, American candidates?
Well, these are real candidates. These are real search results and real web pages. But we chose deliberately in that first experiment, we chose to use the 2010 Australian election for prime minister. We did that because we wanted to make sure that, the participants in our experiment would all be undecided, because it's undecided voters that really determine who wins an election. And that's how we decided to handle that issue. We used real election material, but that Americans would be unfamiliar with, so that by definition they'd all be undecided. And when I say search rankings favoring one candidate or another, that means that if you click on a search result, you link to a web page which makes one candidate look really good compared to another. And we thought that using this method, we could probably shift people's voting preferences by 2 or 3%. At least that's what I thought. And that's not what we found. We found that we were able to shift people's voting preferences by over 48% after they conducted just one online search in which they're seeing real search results connecting to real web pages, but we're controlling the order in which the search results appear. So that got us very concerned, and I thought, frankly, that we had made a mistake somehow in our procedures. So we replicated this this phenomenon, which we ended up calling SEAM, as you said, which stands for Search Engine Manipulation Effect. We replicated it repeatedly, time after time, different groups, eventually with a national study in the U.S. And then eventually we even went to India and did this with real voters in the middle of a real election. And over and over and over again, what we found was that people trust those search rankings so much that if high-ranking items on the list make one candidate look better than another, that shifts all kinds of preferences, including how much they trust the candidate, how much they like the candidate, and whether they'll vote for the candidate. So, you know, there's a problem here because in real life, when, you know, there's real elections, for whatever reason, search rankings do end up favoring one candidate over another. For, you know, why that's happening, you know, we can discuss that, but that's what, you know, the search engine is all about, is putting things into an order. And when it puts things into an order, one candidate rises to the top. And you know, in a big country, that can shift millions of votes toward that candidate. Another thing we discovered in these experiments was that people are unaware of the bias that they're seeing. You know, because when we use a search engine and we do a search and we get search results, we kind of turn off our bias detectors. We expect the search engine to put things into an order. We expect it to put, you know, the good stuff at the top. So we're not looking for bias. So in our experiments, people could not detect bias. So in other words, that means search rankings can shift votes around without anyone knowing that they're being manipulated.
I want to go back to some of the questions I had about like the concepts that you use for undecided voters. In terms of I want to stay for a moment in terms of that not being able to detect bias. What is it that when we approach a search engine, when we interface with a search engine, what are the assumptions that we have? That it's like nature? Or do we have some level of consciousness of, like, how much savvy do people generally approach a search engine with?
Well, people, there's been a lot of research on that, not my research, but other people have looked into this. People are very, very trusting of search engine results because we believe that they're very objective and that they're impartial because we know somehow or other that they're, you know, that they're done by a computer program. So, you know, that's very unusual because when we look at other kinds of media, we look at newspapers, radios, television, you know, we know there's bias. We know everyone's, you know, got their own angle on things. And, you know, there's a lot of competition in those worlds. But when it comes to search results, there's almost no competition. And we just naturally assume that what we're seeing is very, very objective, is impartial, is unbiased. And that's part of the problem here. That's one of the reasons, that's one of two reasons, it turns out, why SEAM is such a huge effect. That is why it affects people's opinions, you know, so dramatically.
Because you're just so vulnerable. I mean, that's what I mean by nature. It's like, you know, I guess when it rains, it doesn't ever contemplate to me that there's a rain machine out there. It's just like, oh, it stinks. It rains. And in terms of politics, like, I'm not going to go to the polls today. I don't contemplate that it's because it's rainy. I don't want to get wet, and I'm not that into this election, and so I'm just going to stay dry.
Right.
I mean, that concept fascinates me. But I'm curious as to the when you take, let's say, the Australian elections as a measure. I mean, I know you did this in India, but I wonder, like, how much does undecided voter, at least in the context of your experiments, line up with uninformed voter? So in other words, like, if I go in with no knowledge whatsoever, I would imagine this would have a much greater impact on me than even if I'm undecided, but I have some foundational knowledge of both candidates. or maybe it changes also if I have foundational knowledge of one candidate but not the other?
Well, you're quite right in, you know, in your conjectures there, but we've actually been studying this issue now recently, and again, we're getting surprised by what we found. For example, in the big study we did in India, there the familiarity level, you know, with the candidates was extremely high because we did it right in the middle of their big election there that they had in 2014. So on a scale of 1 to 10, the familiarity level with the candidates was over 8. Whereas when we did the stuff in the U.S. using the Australian election, the familiarity was like, you know, 1 or 2 on a scale of 10. But even high familiarity level does not protect people from this kind of influence, it turns out, because we still got a very, very large shift in India with real voters who were highly familiar with the candidates. And the more recent research we've done, which is in conjunction with the national elections in the UK last year, you know, and we've moved on, actually. We've done a lot of new research on this. We're actually finding out that people who who are not undecided, and who actually have some opinion about things, they too can be shifted. And right this minute, it's beginning to look like, I mean, the data are basically telling us that the people who can be shifted the most are the ones who actually have a kind of a moderate opinion about things. The people who have just no opinion at all, sometimes, believe it or not, those people are hard to shift. Sometimes those are people who by nature are just, you know, they're just going to stay in the middle no matter what. But people who have a moderate opinion about things are easy to shift. And we have, you know, we've looked at this demographically too, because some demographic groups are much more vulnerable to this effect than others. And the most vulnerable group we found in the United States, in fact, we were able to shift 80% of them, was moderate Republicans. So people with moderate views on things, believe it or not, they seem to be the easiest group of all to shift, very trusting of search rankings. And again, they'll just move very dramatically in one direction or another based on, you know, what's higher in search rankings.
That both of those things fascinate me. What both the fact that a moderately informed person or moderately, I guess, engaged is easier to shift, and a moderate Republican would be easiest to shift. What do you have a sense of what accounts for that?
We're just starting to learn about that aspect of things. I mean, so many aspects of this, Sam, have just, you know, surprised and shocked, and then surprised and shocked me again. You know, as we have done this research over the years, you know, this is very new territory. You know, this discovery of this phenomenon is really a major discovery. It's one of the largest effects ever discovered in the behavioral sciences. And, you know, we're kind of in every aspect of it, we've been working from scratch, you know, trying to learn how it works. One thing that we've learned just in the last few weeks in recent experiments is that SEAM not only impacts voting preferences, it impacts decisions, people make, opinions people form about apparently almost everything. The three experiments we just completed showed that we could shift people's opinions about artificial intelligence, whether it's dangerous or not, about fracking, whether it's dangerous or not, about whether people are born gay or not, or whether they have a choice. We think, again, pretty much everything that we form opinions about is affected by search results if people use the internet and if, of course, if they're using a search engine.
Let me just put a flagpole in and say the AI issue, the artificial intelligence, that's terrifying, right? Because ultimately it's going to be AI that's going to be you're going to be indexing those search results. That's how they'll come and get us, right? I mean,
you know, but that is so insightful what you just said, because I'm actually about to publish a piece in which I raise this. I raise this issue. No. This is a creepy question. The question.
Well,
is,
it's a creepy scenario too. I got to tell you.
What is the, you know, this source of influence, right? What if this is a kind of a mind control machine? What if it doesn't want us to think bad things about it? What if, you see what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
Right, exactly. What if it wants to influence our feelings about, you know, the mind control machine itself? How do you defend yourself from that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, right? I mean, theoretically, if I'm Google and I control in the United States 80% of the search market and 90 some odd percent worldwide, I've got to have at least some. I mean, look, I have all the data, right? Like, I know how, where, what gets a click on that first page. And so I've got to know at least part of what you now know, even before you knew it, as a researcher. And, you know, I got to have a sense of, like, are people looking up Bing? Are people looking up stories about other search engines? Are people looking up, is Google evil? You know, these type of things. And I could imagine I might, you know, get with our PR department and say, hey, is there a message you want us to get out there about Google? I mean, theoretically, right? There's no reason why that couldn't be happening now. You don't need just, I mean, a machine may have even that much more incentive to make sure that nobody, you know, starts sniffing around the central machine. But Google really is in some way, right, that machine at this moment.
See, what you are saying is just sheer genius. I have to compliment you because you're getting it. You're seeing, you know, how big this problem is. It's not just that this effect is so large. It's that it's in the hand of one company that wants us to believe that this is an awesome company that can do no wrong, and they've got this means of controlling our opinion about everything, including our opinion about the company.
Well, I got to tell you that as soon as this interview is over, I'm going to search you on Google and see how far down on the page you are. My guess would be you're like on page 47 at this point. But all right, let me just go back to this idea of moderate Republicans. And the reason why I'm fascinated by that is that anecdotally, just in talking to moderate Republicans in my life, which is, I have to admit, you know, fairly a narrow experience for me, but that right now in particular, and I'm curious as to when you did this research, right now, and I imagine there's been a sort of a continuum here too to this point. I don't know if there is a more sort of, I don't want to say confused, but a more vulnerable profile of a voter that must be out there, because everything they thought about the Republican Party, right? I mean, we see this on a daily basis in the political press. You see moderate Republicans saying, I can't believe this is actually the party I've been a part of, or this is I am now finally seeing the real I mean, I you know, I track this for a living. I'm seeing multiple headlines that say, like, Democrats were right. The left was right. There are, that this is a very vulnerable group that I imagine is out there looking for, you know, and we've had, there's been a lot written over the past 5 or 10 years about the failure of institutions that provide sort of leadership, you know, that, you know, whether it's the church or whether it's politicians or whether it's other institutions that we look to as guideposts. In the Republican Party, the establishment has failed to provide is no longer the signifier. I would imagine this is a group of people, at least in the context of politics right now, who are looking around like, I need some neutral source where I can have confidence in. I mean, is it possible that that impacts it too? That, like, you know, today it's moderate Republicans, but, you know, sometime in the future it's some other group that feels particularly unmoored from the traditional signifiers in their life.
Well, as I say, this is something that we're just beginning to look at closely. And, you know, this could apply to more than just moderate Republicans.
Right.
It could be that people with moderate views, you know, those are, let's say, thinking people. That's in a way what moderate means. You know, you think about things. You're not strongly committed to, you know, one position from which you will never move. So, yeah, it could be that that moderates in general and moderate Republicans in particular, they're the key to a lot of things that are going to happen, because they really are looking around for anchors. They're looking for answers. And again, what we have found is one of the places that they look and where they're very easy to shift is search rankings.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm asking, maybe I need to clarify what you mean by moderate Republicans.
Sure.
Because I guess that could be interpreted in a number of different ways. I mean, my sense is that moderate Republicans are just as wed to their belief system as I, as like a, sort of a left winger, I think I might be characterized, is to mine. It's just that, because they're Republicans, they're also sort of have a partisan, well, not a partisan, but a cultural identifier, right? A Republican. And so that part, it seems to me, not their belief system. Their belief system's probably the same as it was, 2 years ago. We should have low taxes, let's say, and we should have smaller government or whatever it is, but socially liberal. Whatever that belief system was, is probably the same. But the signifier that they used to use, the institution that they would look to say, hey, this is the guy who we decide, who we think, this is the slate that we put forward, our nominating slate, if you will. And this is the one you should subscribe to because you are self-identified as a Republican. But that whole process has been missed up. I mean, that's why I'm saying in terms of Republicans, it's interesting because that is not existing in any other, if you're a hardcore conservative, you're getting a lot of... you have a lot of signifiers out there that are actually gaining strength. Frankly, the same if you're, and the establishment Democrats or moderate Democrats, I think there's no undercutting of what they perceive as the sort of classic voices of authority or reason. And even on the left of the Democratic Party, there's a set of, sort of signifiers that still have some sway. But moderate Republicans are the ones who seem to be going through a cognitive dissonance right now that I would imagine would make them susceptible. I remember, if I dressed a certain way when I was in my early 20s, I could be guaranteed of being approached by someone from Dianetics because there was something I was sending out that suggested, I'm a little bit lost right now. Does that make any sense?
I think you have some very good insights there. Obviously I'm focused on, one particular kind of research.
Right.
And so, I think you have some very good insights.
All right. Well, so let me ask you, when you had different sources of news, I think I have a sense of this because I've read the piece, but explain to people why this one thing, search engines, is different than even maybe 20 years ago when we had three network news and, there was three or maybe 30 years ago now. Walter, what's different between Google and Walter Cronkite, let's say?
Well, they actually have something in common because Walter Cronkite, this was an era when, news was in the hands of a very, very small number of people. And Walter Cronkite was the man who was, trusted by, tens of millions of people. He was never caught up in any scandals or anything. And he was, he had a fatherly way about him and a high level of trust there. And, now we basically people have that level of trust, to the nth degree for Google. We've learned about one aspect of it that's quite interesting. One of the reasons why we have the trust is, of course, for all intents and purposes, there's no real competitor. I mean, you know, Google handles most of our search, and they do it really, really well, better than, you know, anyone else does. But there's another part of it, it turns out, that's quite interesting. There's a kind of operant conditioning aspect to what's happening here. We're in a way, we're like rats in a Skinner box, because most of the searches that we conduct are just routine searches. They're just things like, what's the capital of, you know, Uganda? I mean, it's, they're very simple searches. That's, you know, more than 90% of our searches, more than 95% are really that kind of search. You know, what's playing at the movie theater and things like that. So when we do routine searches, simple searches, the results, the answer to our question always turns up at the top of the list, and it turns up instantly. It's like magic. So we are trained over and over and over again, day after day, to believe what's higher is better, what's higher is truer. And then the day comes, finally, when we actually want to research something that we're really not sure about, and, you know, where we're really trying to make up our minds, and that conditioning kicks in, because we're going to focus mainly on, you know, what's near the top, and whatever is at the top, we're going to trust the most. And we've actually studied this, you know, in an experiment to show that when you break trust with people, you know, and you teach them that that rule doesn't always work, now they're more likely to look at lower ranked items. But, you know, that conditioning is so powerful. So there's never been a, this is called a list effect, and there's never been a list effect like seeing, because it's supported by a daily regimen of conditioning that never stops.
That's fascinating. It's like the owner of the dog, every time he snaps his fingers, he gives a treat, and then he can get away with one time every now and then where no treat.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, that's how you get, that's how they get us to get into the car to go see the vet, I guess. All right. Well, here's the part at the end, which is, I got to say, is a little scary. And, and just in general, I mean, I'm full disclosure, I'm a little more scared of Donald Trump. But at the end of your piece, you tell us about specifically about Google, that there seems to be one candidate that or one campaign, I should say, that was that seems to have some savvy about this. Briefly tell us, this is not this is relevant for the broader story, but the Clinton campaign seems to, at least to the extent that we're talking about Google, and this is really about Google when we say 80% of all searches in this country, they're on top of it, as it were.
Well, it's that's one way to put it. Another way to put it is that as someone told me the other day, there's a kind of blurry line between Google as a company and, you know, some candidates and some parts of our government. It's kind of very blurry line these days. I mean, six federal agencies are now headed by former Google executives. You know, Obama's chief technology officer, former Google executive. Hillary Clinton's chief technology officer, hired a few months ago away from Google. The head of Google bankrolled last year a semi-secret company called The Groundwork. Look it up. It is cool to try to find out about it, because you can find out nothing.
I did that. Let me ask you this. I mean, you're a clinical psychiatrist. When I click on The Groundwork, it takes me to a page that is unclickable, with this sort of like scary, you know, almost like Illuminati like a symbol.
Yes.
And it's unclickable. There is no explanation as to what this is at all. What are they doing there? Are they trying to, are they purposely trying to get, because this is by Schmidt, right? This is by, this company is the former CEO of Google. And this is, apparently they are the groundwork.com is one of the biggest vendors, or I should say their biggest client is the Clinton campaign. When somebody does something like this, are they just messing with us? I mean, are they trolling? Why would they make it so opaque and so
They're not just messing with us, okay? I know too much, to be honest with you. And they're not just messing with us. They're laughing at us. They are laughing. And so I encourage people to go and look at that scary webpage.
It's
because they are laughing at us. That company was set up by Eric Schmidt for the sole purpose of putting Hillary Clinton in office. I happen to like Hillary Clinton. I think she'd be a fine president. But I also believe in the free and fair election. And we no longer have a free and fair election. We calculate that Google will be able to shift between 2.6 and 10.4 million votes in November to Mrs. Clinton without anyone knowing that this is occurring and without leaving a paper trail.
Now let me ask you this.
That's not democracy.
When you do that analysis, how do you determine that? And with our awareness of this dynamic, what should because I went and I Googled in preparation for our talk. I Googled Hillary Clinton. I Googled Bernie Sanders to see if I could see anything discernible. And when I do that with Hillary Clinton, let's say, I get just basically, fairly vanilla style. I get the in the news is at the top of the mm-hmm. page. And mm-hmm. I guess, Clinton-Trump race wouldn't even be close, is what I get. I mean, is that basically what I'm looking for, is like what those headlines are? Because then
no.
I get HillaryClinton.com and then Hillary Clinton on Twitter.
No. First of all, unless you're using a proxy or you're using Tor, remember that your search results you see are customized for you. Google knows who you are. So they're going to show you, whatever they think you want to see.
When I do Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders could win the nomination. You may be right about that.
Yeah. Well, so what I'm saying is that, it's hard to know what they're sending out to whom, because they're sending out customized rankings based on, in-depth profiles they have about every person.
All right. So if I go in there with an anonymizer, let's say, or I use Tor, will I see positive stuff about Clinton?
No, you could see anything, because then you're seeing their generic output, and in their generic output, they're not going to necessarily show any obvious bias. And by the way, remember that the bias is very hard to see anyway, even right. when my staff gives me search rankings that have been prepared for an experiment where I know there's bias, I, generally speaking, cannot see it. The only way you detect the bias is you actually have to click on the items and let's start to look at the web pages. And it's very easy to mask this. I mean, we've masked it so that 100% of the participants in our experiments are completely unaware of any bias.
Wow.
So it's they have incredible control, not just over, opinions and how they want to shift opinions, but, whether or not they want you to, see the manipulation. And they it's very, very simple to mask this manipulation so you cannot see it.
So if I wanted to do some real-world sleuthing, I would have to call up my sort of moderate Republican friends, let's say,
mm-hmm.
Who are, sort of undecided, they're not sure what they're going to do, and say, Google Hillary Clinton, tell me what the top two hits are, click through and tell me what you find.
Yes, you'd have to do that kind of thing. And, of course, this is what, the FBI and the NSA do when they're, doing internet research, is they actually they set up lots and lots of different fake people. They call them sock puppets. Now, fake people, of course, Google can detect also, so that, the sock puppets are not necessarily the best way to get at this. But yes, you're right. You'd have to go and survey your friends who have different political positions, and you'd have to get them to, search on things and click on things. And, it would be a big, big operation to try to do this. This is, as I say, it's a new world. It's a new world of influence. And, whatever it is that you and I might think we figured out, believe me, there are pretty smart people at this company, and they figured these things out years ago, and they're way ahead of us.
Now, the last question I have to ask you while I have you on the phone. Let's say, hypothetically, I wanted to promote a podcast, a radio show. How would I go about doing that?
How would you promote it?
Yeah.
I'm
talking about my own.
You mean in search rankings?
Right, exactly. Yes.
Well, you know, SEO is a real thing, and there are companies that can help you with that. There are link builders in the Philippines you can hire for, you know, dirt cheap, and they kind of are always trying to outfox Google's algorithm, and they can push you up higher. You know, you have to get up on that first page. That's, you know, or you don't even exist.
Indeed.
So it can be done. SEO is real. And SEO, believe it or not, doesn't really bother me because SEO is a competitive process.
Right.
You know, candidate A can use it. Candidate B can use it. And they're competing just like they're competing with billboards and commercials. What bothers me is, you know, where there is no competition. And that is where, you know, the search engine company itself is making things happen. And you have no way to correct for what they're doing.
Dr. Robert Epstein, the piece is The New Mind Control. It is a preview of your forthcoming book. It is available at Aon. We will link to it at majority.fm. Really fascinating and disturbing stuff. I appreciate your coming on to talk to us about it.
Thank you, Sam. It's a fabulous interview. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.